Well, the first book was awesome, Hockey Card Stories, and of course it was printed with a great cover, a cover just reminiscent of the waxed hockey card packages. I thought that was fantastic. Then the next book, One Night Only, all those guys that just lived the dream that all of us beer league players, just give me one game, and Ken Reed was able to capture that. In the new book, Dennis Marouk, The Unforgettable Story of Hockey's Forgotten 60-Goal Man. Mr. Reed, I'm not sure there's ever been a more appropriate title for a book about hockey's forgotten 60-goal man.
Thanks, Rob. You know what? We debated the title, and coming from a guy like you who knows the game and the history of the game, that means a lot because, I mean, when people list the 60-goal scorers, if you're just sitting around a bar and you're trying to do it, Dennis is the first to admit that he's maybe the 19th or 20th guy of the 20 you'll come up with if you get him. Because, I mean, scoring 60 is amazing, but when he scored 60, he lost the goal-scoring title by 32 goals. Because that Gretzky kid had 92. But Dennis, his story, the title's kind of appropriate, too, for what happened to him after his career.
Right.
Because he pulled a 180. He just disappeared. He coached for a little bit in the old Whipple. You remember that league in Texas?
Yep.
And then he just disappeared. And when I say disappeared, he went totally off the radar. He lived in Vegas for a small stretch. And then he lived in Aspen for 8 years where he battled a lot of things. I mean, he coached a bit of high school hockey, but he was working at the Hotel Jerome, which is a pretty famous hotel there. He was delivering high-end furniture to the likes of Goldie Hawn. He was a farmhand for John Oates from Hall & Oates, and he was about as far away from his former life of being an NHL All-Star as you can get, and that's what really appealed to me about his story, because I didn't want to get together with someone and write a book about the goals they scored.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get together with somebody and write a book about the story that they have. And I think that's what Dennis has.
So how did you find the story, or how did the story find you, Ken? I mean, I know your background. You pay close attention to all that, and that's your ear. I get that. And Dennis Marouk was actually somebody in my youth that I looked up to, number 9 with the Washington Capitals. For some reason, I was this crazy kid with a fascination of that red jersey with all the stars on it. But he did fall off the face of the earth. So how did you fall upon this?
He did. When I wrote my first book, Hockey Card Stories, I was like you. I loved Marouk's look as a player. And that's kind of all I knew about him. I knew he was a sniper because he scored 60 goals. And I knew he had this wicked handlebar mustache. So when I set out to do Hockey Card Stories, I wanted to find Dennis Marouk. And, man, I couldn't find him. It was like I'd just fallen off the face of the earth. I eventually found a number for him. And lo and behold, he's living here in Toronto. I called him up, you know, out of the blue. Cold call, as we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, do you want to do this interview for a hockey card? Sure. So we did an interview for a hockey card. That was that. I ran into him at Greg Zahn's golf tournament the next summer, gave him a book. Oh, nice to meet you. Nice to see you in person. That was that. And a few months later, a friend of his called and said, would you be interested in writing a book with Dennis? And I said, about what? And they just said, about Dennis. And I said, well, you know, sure, why not? Let's have lunch. Dennis and I'll have lunch. And, you know, I kind of went into it. Your typical reporter, I was a little curious, and I thought, okay, what's the story on this guy? He got 60 goals, so, I mean, that's nice, but is that the whole story? And I planned on meeting with Dennis for lunch for half an hour. I turned my recorder on. I right at the way, I said, hey, is it cool if we record just in case we get somewhere? And we sat and talked for 4 hours, and I was blown away by the stuff he was telling me. He was very candid about how the game was played back then, but more so, I was blown away by the stuff he told me after his career ended. I mean, he contemplated taking his own life.
Yep.
He was depressed. He had severe anxiety. He was like a lot of players from his era. They were kings. They were the kings of the castle 1 year, and then the next year they're kind of not even on the right side of the moat. I mean, guys didn't manage their money that well back then. You know, guys didn't really prepare for life after hockey. There's my son coming home. And that's kind of just the way it was back then. So we sat for 4 hours, and then, hi, Louie, how are you, buddy? And the next thing we know, we had 20, 25 hours on tape, and we got ourselves a book deal out of it. And it just kind of progressed from there, and I'd never written a book specifically with someone before, so we formed a pretty unique relationship. His anxiety stuff, I mean, I can relate. I battled through that, and we just kind of hit it off. And Dennis is he's a short talker. So I had to really dig to get details on some stories. And it was kind of interesting, too, because he didn't remember his goal. He remembered his stories, but he didn't remember his goals because he was kind of, his take was the goals just happened. I was a goal scorer. So he didn't remember his goals. But, I mean, even through the process of writing the book, he almost died. I mean, he had to have quadruple bypass last January. And I went and visited him in the hospital a couple days after, and I was thinking, oh, my God, I don't want this to be a book about, you know, a guy who just passed away. But much like in his previous comeback, this was his second comeback, and I'm happy to say that he's a really active guy here in Toronto. He participates in a lot of charities, and he's the first guy that laughs. He'll do these hockey alumni events, and he'll ask his team, hey, name the 2060 goal scorers, and they'll say, well, I don't know who the 20th is, and he'll say, me. So kind of the whole angle of the book.
He is Ken Reid. The book, Dennis Marouk, The Unforgettable Story of Hockey's Forgotten 60 Goal Man. Because you and I have talked about the process of writing and the process of publishing in the past, I do need to know, was this difficult to sell to the publisher? Was this a difficult person to bring forward and have people care about?
It was. And much like my previous two books, I kind of say that I like to akin the way the kind of books I write to music. People are going to line up to see Metallica, and everyone's going to buy a Metallica ticket. But I'm trying to get people to come down to the coffee shop to see me and my acoustic guitar play the songs I wrote myself, you know?
Yep.
It's I don't think it's not for everyone right off the bat, but if I can hook somebody into believing this story and get them a little curious about a guy that they probably only know from the cover of Goal magazine in 1982 or from an old hockey card, then I think it's a great story to tell. And don't get me wrong, I love Metallica as much as everybody, and I love the big popular hockey books too. But I don't know. I find it, I'm very curious about the guys who maybe slid under the radar, who shouldn't have, and who should get more credit than they deserve. Like for one night only, I think what those guys did is incredible.
Yeah.
They made it to the best league in the world. Whereas a lot of people might scoff and say, oh, they only played one game. But they made it to the best league in the world, so I wanted their stories to be told. Now some people might look at Dennis Marouk and they'll say, well, he got 60 goals, but Gretzky had 92 that year. Yeah, but he still scored 60, and he scored 50 the year before that. And he was a point-per-game player for 888 games in an era when guys his size were thrown around like road apples by the Philadelphia Flyers and the Boston Bruins, and he survived in that league. And he played for some really bad teams, but he stuck out. He was an all-star. I mean, I think his story needs to be told. And then when I found out what he went in after his career, I was blown away. But yes, to shop that book to publishers, they kind of look at it and they say, well, that's a good story, but it's kind of a niche book. And so we went with ECW, who's published my previous books. It's kind of like if you're writing a movie script, the easy thing to do is to make the Marvel comic movie these days. The tough thing to do is to go fund the independent story. So I was thrilled that ECW picked it up and published this book. But you're right, it's kind of like... shopping a small project is a lot more difficult than shopping a big one, but I was glad we got a bite. And if I can get it into people's hands, and I know it appeals to hardcore hockey fans, but I think it will appeal to people who just like the story as well.
I want to deal a little bit with his on ice and then get to the off ice. And I'm curious about your observation of working with him. How much of the fact that, I mean, he was drafted by the Golden Seals, he goes to Cleveland, and then he ends up in Washington, who, you know, they were god awful. How much of playing on bad, struggling, nobody cares teams formed him as an NHL player?
I think a lot. I think that really, it identified him early on, and he wanted to be known as a winner. And Dennis's whole take was, I'm a goal scorer. My job's to score goals. And if I score goals, I think that'll have the best chance of helping my team make the playoffs. Now, Dennis wasn't known as a defensive forward. He's the first to admit that. But his role was to score goals. And, I mean, every year would come to an end, and while we were writing the book, you could just see it, and then we didn't make the playoffs again. And so he'd go to the Worlds every year, and at the Worlds he wanted to put on a show. He's still one of the top Canadian goal scorers of all time at the World Hockey Championships because he just kept going there because his teams kept getting eliminated. Now think about how hard it is to miss the playoffs when 16 teams make it in the 21-team NHL, and he was always on the outside looking in. But I think a lot of that formed his identity. I don't think playing on teams like that helped confidence, but on the ice you wouldn't know it. And he just he kept playing with that edge. And he has a story in the book where Wayne Gretzky comes up to him on a faceoff and they're kind of sitting there waiting for the line to drop the puck. And Gretzky says, "How come you play this way, Dennis? Why are you always slashing and hacking and punching and fighting sometimes?" And he just says, "Because I can't do what you do. I have to do what I do to survive in the league."
Right.
And a recurring theme in the book is that he just kind of has to do what he has to do to survive as a small guy in a league of big men. But, yeah, the losing hurt, and the losing really added up early in his career. I mean, you can still hear it in his voice that, you know, he almost kind of makes fun of it. "Oh, yeah, I played for the Seals and the Barons and the North Stars for two games and the Caps," you know, eventually making the playoffs. And then when Washington kind of hit their stride when Brian Murray took over in 83, they sent Dennis to Minnesota. So that hurt a lot, too, because he gets into the book about how he and Lou Nanny didn't exactly see eye to eye during his first tenure in Minnesota. And then all of a sudden, 5-6 years later, he's back playing for the guy.
You know, it's funny, Chapter 8, Learn to Be a Prick, which, by the way, might be one of the great titles for anybody's book.
Thank you.
But he directly relates what you just talked about, the conversation with Gretzky, to Dave Hutchinson, who was, you know, kind of a guy who bounced around a little bit. And what struck me about that was he just took it all in and said, okay, right? There was no self-reflection. I trust him. He told me what to do. I will now go do it.
Crazy, eh?
Yeah.
So, Dennis was a total sniper in the OHL, and he could just kind of skate around all kinds of room. But upon being drafted, he hooked up with Dave Hutchinson, who was a rough-and-tumble player that summer. And Hutchinson said, "You have to learn to be a prick if you want to survive the NHL level." And Dennis kind of said, "Well, what does that mean?" "Well, you got to hack, you got to slash, you got to hit anybody." And, man, he went, that's basically, like you said, he added that aspect to his game and survived in the NHL for 14 years. I mean, he was playing against other teams' top lines the whole time, and he played with a nasty edge. You know, he gets in the book about how he cross-checked Wendell Clark in the face one time. And it's funny, I'll run into Wendell around town, and he'll say, "Yeah, but luckily for Dennis, I never played him again in my career." You know, so he got away with one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he was a nasty player from the start to the finish, but that's how you created space. And the other thing that I learned from writing the book and talking to guys about Dennis, because I try to start off each chapter a little quote from a teammate or an ex-player, and they kind of said this guy would go to the, like, think about how Ryan Smith used to play the game. That's kind of what Dennis was. But, you know, and Dennis did that in an era where the lumber came down on you. So this guy paid the price to score goals. He scored most of his goals where most goals are scored from, in tight.
Yep.
And he was 100 and, well, probably listed at 170 pounds, and probably more like 160 pounds, and in there getting cross-checked by, I don't know, the likes of who, let's say Don Selesky or something on one night, or Denny Potvin.
Sure.
And he paid the price, and he defended himself by being that prick that Dave Hutchinson taught him to be. Forgive my language.
Ken Reed is our guest, the author of Dennis Mrook, the unforgettable story of hockey's forgotten 60-goal man. He's our guest here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. That 60-goal season was 81-82. You referenced it already. 60 goals nowadays, I mean, we'd stop the world as we know it, but he was 32 goals behind Wayne Gretzky. I have to know, though, because the chapter that he talks about the All-Star game, is that, because it's played in Landover, Maryland, he's the crowd favorite, is that his crowning hockey achievement, playing in that All-Star game?
Dennis would tell you just making it to the NHL and playing for 14 years was, but I think that 82 All-Star game was.
Yeah.
He still gets pretty happy when he talks about the ovation he had. He was the last player to be introduced on the ice in Landover. He got a big pop. It's on YouTube. It's one of the few clips we could find of him on YouTube. And you can just see this smile on his face. And I think for what meant most for that, for Dennis, was his parents were there. He's really, really loves his mom and dad. Now, his mom passed away, and I've never met a guy who loves his mom as much as Dennis Mrook does. I know we all love our mom, but man, this guy just adored his mother. And the whole time leading up to the All-Star game, his mom and dad were with him. There was a TV crew following him around. That was the one week, I think, in his career he probably got the attention he deserved.
Right.
And it only lasted for a couple days. But I think that if you were going to define, pick a one moment for Dennis that was the highlight of his career from just an individual basis, it would probably be that night in Landover, Maryland at the 82 All-Star Game where he's the last guy introduced. If you look it up on YouTube, he just kind of has this aw shucks kind of grin on his face, but you can tell he's taking it all in, and it was pretty special for him for sure. He also points out the world championships, and he keeps stressing these were my playoffs because my team couldn't make it. So, you know, this is a guy who scored on Tretiak and whatnot. But, yeah, if you were to pick out one moment, if I was, I'd say it was the 82 All-Star game for sure.
Ken, you know, I want to – the real story, as you mentioned, the hockey's one part, but it's kind of the – and most guys, as you and I are very comfortable with, once they're mm-hmm. done, they get back into hockey or they go back into coaching mm-hmm. or, you know, become mm-hmm. realtors. I'm opening up this book, and it starts with him taking over a ship in the Gulf of Mexico, I believe.
In the Gulf of Mexico, yeah.
Right.
I mean,
and that's not what I expected to hear.
No. I mean, I debated starting the book with he took a drive through the desert one night in Vegas and was going to end his life. I debated starting the book with that, but I decided to start the book with just him on a boat because, I mean, okay, so you get the cover of the book. Oh, wow, this guy scored 60 goals, really. And you open it up, and the first chapter is, okay, I'm at the wheel of a service boat for oil rigs in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico. I'm 6 hours out into the Gulf. I'm at the wheel. Waves are crashing over my head. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. It's 15 years ago, I was at the NHL All-Star Game. What in the hell is happening? How the hell did I get here? And that's kind of the genesis of the book is what happened to me? Like, what? How did this happen? I used to be this guy, but now I'm this guy. And I think as people read the book, they'll kind of get a feel for how it's going to end. Because Dennis is a hockey player. That's who he is. That's who he's always been. But for 15, 20 years, he tried to figure out who he was. But kind of, he already had the answer, but he just didn't know it yet, if that makes sense.
It does, and you talk about referencing and starting with the drive. He just decides one day he's going to mm-hmm. call everybody, and he's driving to Vegas, and he's what strikes me about that, and I don't know if it's a function of age, but the circles that we seem to be in right now, this is not unlike a Clint Malarchuk epiphany. This is not unlike some of the other guys of that era that, mm-hmm. you know, leave hockey yet are unfulfilled and should have had everything because they were, you know, kings of the castle for a long time. And his mm-hmm. ends in a positive way. And I love the part about, you know, you go to sleep on the side of the road, you wake up, and he had no idea how close he was. No idea how close he was.
He was literally on the edge. Absolutely. He was literally on the edge of the world looking down and could have died on this drive where he just pulled over the side of the road in the middle of the night, crashed, woke up, you know, let's take a pee or whatever, and oh my God, I almost drove over a cliff. And then it hits him like, I got to get my life back in gear. But yeah, it was, you know, Dennis was in a lot of ways, you know, very similar to Clint Malarchuk. And Clint Malarchuk, I'm sure, is very similar to a lot of other hockey players yep. in that era because they were well off at the time. But it wasn't life-changing money. You couldn't live the rest of your life. I think the most Dennis ever made in a season was $300,000. Now, don't get me wrong. That's great money in the
sure.
mid-'80s. But if you tax it, you take away your agent's fee. You know, he's got three kids. He's got to feed. It's a great living for a year or two, but that money disappears. And he just couldn't figure out what the next step was. And I think, I mean, Clint had that, obviously, that the post-traumatic syndrome after post-traumatic stress disorder after what happened
sure.
to him in Buffalo that night when he took the skate in the throat, and then that stayed with him. For Dennis, I think it was just, he just couldn't figure out who he was. He'd been identified since the time he was 8 years old as a hockey player.
Right.
That's all he knew. And his career ended with a knee injury. He blocked a shot, which Brian Bellows says, what the hell was Dennis doing blocking a shot? Everybody blocks shots nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you were a sniper, you didn't block shots back in the day, but Dennis was. That's just the way he played. But he just really struggled with finding out who he was. You combine that with a couple of failed marriages, and it's, I'm sure for a lot of people it would be a recipe for a lot of troubles, and Dennis was no exception. But what I do love about Dennis is that he found a way to make everything work for him. And he's, honest to God, I hang out with the guy a lot. We do a lot of charity stuff together now, and he's the hit of the party every time. He's a fun guy. He cares. He listens. He's a great guy to hang out with, and we're very, very proud of this project. I know he was extremely proud when he saw it in the bookstore. He called me up, "Oh my God, I'm in Indigo and it's here." I'm like, "Yeah, it looks pretty cool too," you know. So he had a story to tell, and I don't think when we sat down that he even knew what his story was. Like, he knew he had a collection of a bunch of stories, but he didn't really know how it ended. But we sat and we talked, and we kind of realized who he was. And I think maybe that was probably a nice thing for him through this process to kind of figure out, hey, I'm cool with myself, and I'm glad where I'm at. I'm proud of myself. And I mean, he's got he has the three nicest kids I think I've ever met in my life. Oh my God, his daughters are so nice. His son is so nice. His ex-wife, I talked to her in the book, and she is so nice.
Yeah.
It's a shame they couldn't make it work, because they're just, he's a lovely guy. He has a lovely, lovely family. I'm very happy it all worked out for him, for sure.
All right. Now the book is available, right, or is coming out? I just want to make sure it's available.
Yeah, the old in bookstores now. You can get it on Amazon.ca. You can get it through ecwpress.com. You can pick it up at Kohl's, Indigo. Any bookstore will have it. It'll be in the sports section.
So you mentioned it off the top. I'm more now back to the author, because the story is fantastic, and I hope that Dennis, you know, I hope this is a little bit of a rebirth for him and the attention, because, my God, 132 points. You don't do that accidentally, right?
You don't. Isn't it hilarious to people look at Alexander Ovechkin, and you go, you know, he doesn't have the most points in a single season for the Caps, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And people look at you and go, what are you talking about? Well, there was this guy in 1981-82, Dennis Baruch, 130-plus.
So the first two books, Hockey Card Stories, One Night Only, that was you. And this one was the coach. So what's next? What's book number four? Is there another Dennis Baruch story out there for you?
Believe it or not, Rob, book four is in the can, buddy. And it comes out next fall at this time. It's Hockey Card Stories, too.
Ah.
I figure if Stallone made a sequel for Rocky, I had to make one for Hockey Card Stories. And a lot of the feedback from the first one was, oh, man, I love the book, but you needed more cards from the 90s. You needed some Upper Deck. So I talked to the people at Upper Deck, and they were psyched to include their books in it, or their cards in a book.
Yep.
So Hockey Card Stories 2 is on the way.
Well, that means if we don't talk before next fall, we're talking next fall about that book. Ken, as always, appreciate this, man. This is fantastic. Congratulations on the book.
Rob, you're the man, and I love talking to a guy who doesn't ask me who is Dennis Baruch, who knows right off the bat. So that's awesome, buddy.
There's a few of us still kicking around.
Oh, yeah, a few of us old-timers.